Haiku?
Haikus are awful. They're just less fun limericks.
You've been downgraded from heathen to heretic.
Noted.
Okay. I should be asleep.
Okay. Me too.
Thursday, 8 p.m. I wouldn't have guessed that math was your favorite class.
Why not?
I don't know. You climb buildings and leap over things. Most people are good with their bodies or their minds, but not both.
Is that a nice way of saying you think I'm dumb?
No, I mean that... I don't know what I mean.
You mean I'm too sexy to be good at it. That's okay. I get that a lot.
Dot, dot, dot.
It just takes practice like anything else. I was a mathlete 2 high schools ago, I'll have you know. Got a probability and stats question? I'm your guy.
No.
Yes.
So sexy.
I sense insincerity.
No.
Yes.
So are you going to be a math lead at SFV High?
Probably not. My dad made me quit. He wanted me to do something more manly like football.
You play football?
No. He made me quit the mathletes, but he couldn't bully the coach into taking me mid-season. He let it go eventually.
What if he brings it up again now?
I'm a little harder to bully now than I was 2 years ago. I'm meaner now. Bigger, too.
You don't seem mean.
You don't know me that well yet.
Friday, 3:03 a.m. You're awake again.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to talk about this.
And yet?
I saw what happened today. Is your mom okay?
She's okay. It's not the first time. It's not the last time.
Oh, Ollie.
Please, don't oh Ollie me. Tell me something. Anything. Tell me something funny.
Okay. Why was the boy surprised to find celery growing out of his ears?
Why?
Because he'd planted corn. Hello?
Oh, Jesus. That is not a good joke.
Made you smile, though.
Yeah, it did. Thanks.
Anytime. Saturday, 8:01 p.m.
I guess I won't get to meet you in person until school starts.
I don't go to school.
You mean you don't go to SF Valley High? Where do you go?
I mean, I don't go to regular school. I go online.
Why?
I really can't talk about this.
Come on. You gotta give me something here.
I want us to be friends. I don't want you to feel sorry for me.
Just tell me. We're still gonna be friends.
I'm sick.
How sick?
Really sick. Can't leave the house sick.
Jesus. Are you dying?
Not right now, no.
Soon?
If I left the house, yes.
Okay. We're still friends. I don't feel sorry for you.
Thank you.
How does this school thing work?
All my classes are over Skype. I have homework and quizzes and grades. Lots of people are homeschooled.
Huh. Cool. Ever notice how a lot of the National Spelling Bee finalists are all homeschooled?
I've never noticed that.
It's a thing. I wish we could meet.
Me too. Okay. I need to go now.
Go then. Still there?
Yes.
Come to the window.
Now? I'm wearing my nightgown.
Put on a robe. Come to the window so that I can see you.
Okay, I'll be right there. Good night, Ollie.
Good night, Maddie.
Astronaut ice cream. Mr. Waterman's on his way up, Carla says from the doorway. I'm finally putting the finishing touches on my model for architecture class. I've had to cut short two nights of IMs with Ollie to get it done. I don't want my mom to get worried again. The assignment was to design an outdoor shopping/dining center in my favorite style. I chose Art Deco because the buildings look like they're flying even though they're standing still. The centerpiece of the complex is a grassy outdoor seating area populated with oversized, oddly shaped chairs painted in bright zigzag patterns. I've already planted miniature plastic palm trees in the grass, and now I'm strategically placing miniature plastic people holding miniature plastic shopping bags to give it the vigor of life, as Mr. Waterman would say. In 2 years of tutoring, I've only met Mr. Waterman in person twice. Usually all of my tutoring, including architecture, takes place via Skype. My mom made a special exception this week. I think she's still feeling bad about Kara and Ollie's visit from a couple of weeks ago. I told her she had nothing to feel bad about, but she insisted. Having a visitor is a big deal because they have to agree to a medical background check and a thorough physical. Also, they have to be decontaminated, which is basically like getting a high-speed air bath for about an hour. It's a pain to come see me. Mr. Waterman bustles in, looking merry but harried, like Santa Claus on Christmas Eve just before the big ride. The decontamination process makes him cold, so he's rubbing his hands together and blowing on them for warmth. Madeline, he says happily, clapping his hands together. He's my favorite of all my tutors. He never looks at me pityingly, and he loves architecture like I love architecture. If I were going to be something when I grew up, an architect is what I would be. Hi, Mr. Waterman, I smile awkwardly, not really knowing how to be around someone who's not Carla or my mother.
So, what have we got here? He asks, gray eyes twinkling.
I place my last two tiny shoppers next to a toy store and stand back. He circles the model, sometimes beaming, sometimes frowning, all the while making weird clucking sounds.
Well, dear, you've outdone yourself. This is quite lovely.
He straightens from the model and is about to pat me on the shoulder before he catches himself.
No touching allowed.
He shakes his head slightly and then bends over to examine some more.
Yes, yes, quite lovely. There are only a few things we should talk about. But first, where is our astronaut hiding?
Whenever I make a new model, I make a clay astronaut figure and hide him in it. Each figure is different. This time, he's in full astronaut gear, complete with airtight helmet and bulky oxygen tank, sitting in the diner at a table piled high with food. I've made miniature banana split sundaes, blueberry pancake stacks, scrambled eggs, toast with butter and marmalade, bacon, milkshakes, strawberry, chocolate, and vanilla, cheeseburgers, and fries. I'd wanted to make curly fries, but I ran out of time and had to settle for just regular fries.
There he is, Mr. Waterman exclaims.
He clucks at the scene for a few moments and then turns to me. His merry eyes are a little less merry than usual.
It's just wonderful, my dear, but how will he eat all that scrumptious food with his helmet on?
I look back at my astronaut. It had never occurred to me that he'd want to eat the food. Everything's a risk. Carla's smiling at me like she knows something I don't know. She's been doing it all day, whenever she thinks I'm not looking. Also, she's been singing Take a Chance on Me by ABBA, her absolute favorite band of all time. She's breathtakingly out of tune. I'll have to ask Ollie the probability that she could miss every single note. Shouldn't she hit one just by random chance? It's 12:30 p.m., and I have a half hour for lunch before my history tutor comes online. I'm not hungry. I'm basically never hungry anymore. Apparently, a body can exist on I am alone. Carla's not looking, so I tab over to my Gmail. 13 messages from Ollie since last night. They're all sent around 3 a.m., and naturally, he doesn't write a subject. I laugh a little and shake my head. I want to read them. I'm dying to read them. But I have to be careful with Carla in the room. I glance over and find her staring back at me, eyebrows raised. Does she know something? What's so interesting on that laptop? She asks. God, she definitely knows. I draw my chair closer to the desk and place my sandwich on the laptop. Nothing. I take a bite of the sandwich. It's Turkey Tuesday. It's not nothing. Something is making you laugh over there. She inches closer, smiling at me. Her brown eyes crinkle at the corners and her smile reaches the edge of her face. Cat video, I say, through a mouthful of turkey. Ugh, wrong thing to say. Carla lives for cat videos. She thinks they're the only thing the internet is good for. She comes around, stands behind me, and reaches for the laptop. I drop my sandwich and hug the laptop close to my chest. I'm not a good liar. And I say the first thing that pops into my head. You don't want to see this one, Carla. It's bad. The cat dies. We stare at each other in a kind of shocked standoff for a few seconds. I'm shocked because I'm an idiot, and I can't believe that I said that. Carla's shocked because I'm an idiot, and she can't believe that I said that. Her mouth drops open comically, like a cartoon, and her big, round eyes get even bigger and rounder. She bends over at the waist, slaps her knee, and laughs like I've never heard her laugh. Who actually slaps their knee while laughing? You mean to tell me the only thing you could think to say was that it was a dead cat? She's laughing again. So you know. Well, if I didn't know before, I would surely know now. She laughs a little more, slaps her knee again. Oh, you should have seen your face. It's not that funny, I grumble, annoyed that I gave myself away. You forget I have one of you at home. I always know when Rosa is up to no good. Besides, you, Miss Thing, are not any good at hiding things. I see you checking your email and looking for him out the window. I put my laptop back down on the desk. So you're not mad at me? I ask, relieved. She hands me my sandwich. It depends. Why were you hiding it from me? I didn't want you to worry about me getting sad again. She eyes me for a long second. Do I need to worry? No. Then I'm not worrying. She brushes my hair back from my shoulders. Eat, she says. 15 minutes later. Maybe he could come over for a visit? I've surprised myself by asking, but Carla's not surprised at all. She doesn't even pause from wiping away non-existent dust from my bookshelf. Teenagers are the same all over. Give them an inch and they'll take a mile. Is that a no? I ask. She laughs at me. 2 hours later. I try again. It would only be for half an hour. He could get decontaminated like Mr. Waterman, and then... Are you crazy? 10 minutes after that. 15 minutes? No! Later still. Please, Carla. She cuts me off. And here I thought you were doing fine. I am. I am doing fine. I just want to meet him. We can't always get what we want, she says. From the flatness of her tone alone, I know it's a phrase she uses on Rosa all the time. I can tell she regrets saying it to me. But still, she doesn't say anything else. She's leaving for the day, halfway out my bedroom door when she stops. You know I don't like saying no to you. You're a good girl. I rush right through this opening. He'd get decontaminated and sit across the room, far, far away from me, and only for 15 minutes. 30 minutes at the most. She shakes her head, but it's not a firm shake. It's too risky, and your mother would never allow it. We won't tell her, I say instantly. She gives me a sharp, disappointed look. Do you girls really find it so easy to lie to your mamas? To those who wait. Carla doesn't say anything about it again until just after lunch 2 days later. Now, you listen to me, she says. No touching. You stay on your side of the room, and he stays on his. I already told him the same thing. I understand the words she's saying, but I don't understand what she's saying. What do you mean? You mean he's here? He's already here? You stay on your side, and he stays on his. No touching. You understand? I don't, but I nod yes anyway. He's waiting for you in the sunroom. Decontaminated? The look on her face says, what do you take me for? I stand up, sit down, and stand up again. Oh, Lordy, she says, go fix yourself up fast. I'm only giving you 20 minutes. My stomach doesn't just flip. It does high-wire somersaults without a net. What made you change your mind? She comes over, takes my chin in her hand, and stares into my eyes for such a long time that I start to fidget. I can see her sorting through all she wants to say. In the end, all she says is, you deserve a little something. This is how Rosa gets everything she wants. She simply asks for it from her mother with the too big heart. I head to the mirror to fix myself. I've almost forgotten what I look like. I don't spend a lot of time looking. There's no need when there's no one to see you. I like to think that I'm an exact 50-50 mixture of my mom and dad. My warm brown skin is what you get by mixing her pale olive skin with his richer dark brown. My hair is big and long and wavy. Not as curly as his, but not as straight as hers. Even my eyes are a perfect blend, neither Asian nor African, but somewhere in between. I look away, and then look back quickly, trying to catch myself unawares to get a more accurate picture, trying to see what Ollie will see. I try out a laugh, and then smile with teeth and without. I even try out a frown, though I'm hoping I won't have cause to use it. Carla watches my antics in the mirror, amused and bemused at the same time. I almost remember when I was your age, she says. I don't turn around, talking instead to the Carla in the mirror. Are you sure about this? You don't think it's too risky anymore? You're trying to talk me out of it? She comes over and puts a hand on my shoulder. Everything's a risk. Not doing anything is a risk. It's up to you. I look around my white room, at my white couch and shelves, my white walls, all of it safe and familiar and unchanging. I think of Ollie, decontamination cold and waiting for me. He's the opposite of all these things. He's not safe. He's not familiar. He's in constant motion. He's the biggest risk I've ever taken. Future Perfect. From Madeline F. Whittier to genericuser033@gmail.com. Subject, Future Perfect. Sent July 10th, 12:30 p.m. By the time you read this, we will have met. It will have been perfect. Ollie. The sunroom is my favorite room in the house. It's almost all glass. Glass roof and floor-to-ceiling glass windows that look out onto our perfectly manicured back lawn. The room's decor is like a movie set of a tropical rainforest. It's filled with realistic and lush-looking fake tropical plants. Banana and coconut trees laden with fake fruit and hibiscus plants with fake flowers are everywhere. There's even a babbling stream that snakes its way through the room. But there are no fish, at least no real ones. The furniture is aged white wicker that looks like it's been sitting in the sun. Because it's meant to be tropical, my mom keeps a heated fan running and a slightly too warm breeze fills the room. Most days I love it because I can imagine that the glass has fallen away and I'm outside. Other days, I feel like a fish in an aquarium. By the time I get there, Ollie has managed to climb halfway up the rocky back wall, hands and feet wedged into crevices. He's pinching one of the large banana leaves between his fingers when I walk in. "It's not real," he says to me. "It's not real," I say at the same time. He lets go of the branch, but remains where he is on the wall. Climbing for him is like walking for the rest of us. "Are you going to stay up there?" I ask, because I don't know what else to say.
"I'm thinking about it, Maddie. Carla said I had to stay as far away from you as possible, and she doesn't seem like the kind of lady that you piss off."
"You can come down," I say. "Carla's not as scary as she seems."
"Okay."
He slips effortlessly to the floor. He puts his hands into his pockets, crosses his feet at the ankles, and leans back against the wall. I don't think I've ever seen him so still. I think he's trying not to spook me.
"Maybe you should come in," he says.
And then I realize that I'm still in the doorway, holding on to the knob. I close the door, but don't take my eyes off him. His eyes track my movements as well. After all the IMs, I felt like I knew him, but now with him standing in front of me, it doesn't feel that way at all. He's taller than I thought, and way more muscled, but not bulky. His arms are lean and sculpted, and his biceps fill the sleeves of his black t-shirt. His skin is a tanned, golden brown. It would be warm to touch.
"You're different than I thought you'd be," I blurt out.
He grins and a dimple forms just under his right eye.
"I know. Sexier, right? It's okay. You can say it."
I guffaw. How do you manage to carry around an ego that size and weight?
"It's the muscles," he shoots back,
flexing his biceps and raising a single comical eyebrow. Some of my nervousness falls away, but then comes right back when he watches me laugh without saying anything for a few seconds too long.
"Your hair really is so long," he says. "And you never said you had freckles."
Was I supposed to?
"Freckles might be a deal breaker."
He smiles, and the dimple comes back.
Cute.
I move to the couch and sit. He leans against the rock wall across the room. "They're the bane of my existence," I say, referring to the freckles. This is a ridiculous thing to say, because, of course, the bane of my existence is that I'm sick and unable to leave my house. We both realize this at the same time, and then we're both laughing again.
"You're funny,"
he says after our laughter subsides. I smile. I've never thought of myself as a funny girl, but I'm happy that he thinks so. We are awkward together for a few moments, unsure what to say. The silence would be much less noticeable over IM. We could chalk it up to any number of distractions. But right now, in real life, it feels like we both have blank thought balloons over our heads. Actually, mine's not blank at all, but I really can't tell him how beautiful his eyes are. They're Atlantic Ocean blue, just like he'd said. It's strange because, of course, I'd known that. But the difference between knowing it and seeing them in person is the difference between dreaming of flying and flight.
"This is some crazy room," he says, looking around.
"Yeah. My mom built it so I could feel like I was outside."
"Does it work?"
"Most days. I have a really excellent imagination."
"You really are a fairy tale. Princess Madeline and the Glass Castle."
He's quiet again, like he's trying to build up to something. "It's okay to ask me," I say. He's wearing a single black rubber band around his wrist, and he pulls at it a few times before continuing.
"How long have you been sick?"
"My whole life."
"What would happen if you went outside?"
"My head would explode, or my lungs, or my heart."
"How can you joke?"
I shrug. "How can I not? Besides, I try not to want things I can't have."
"You're like a Zen master. You should teach a class."
"It takes a long time to learn." I smile back at him. He crouches and then sits, back against the wall, forearms on his knees. Even though he's still, I can feel the need to move coming off of him. The boy is kinetic energy.
"Where do you want to go the most?" he asks.
"Besides outer space?"
"Yes, Maddie. Besides outer space."
I like the way he says Maddie, as if he's been calling me that my whole life. "The beach. The ocean."
"Want me to describe it for you?"
I nod, more vigorously than I expected to. My heart speeds up like I'm doing something illicit. I've seen pictures and videos, but what's it like to actually be in the water? Is it like taking a bath in a giant tub?
"Sort of," he says slowly, considering. "No, I take it back. Taking a bath is relaxing. Being in the ocean is scary. It's wet and cold and salty and deadly."
That's not what I was expecting. "You hate the ocean?" He's grinning now, warming to his topic.
"I don't hate it. I respect it."
He holds up a single finger.
"Respect. It's Mother Nature at her finest. Awesome, beautiful, impersonal,
Murderous. Think about it. All that water, and you could still die of thirst. And the whole point of waves is to suck your feet from under you so that you drown faster. The ocean will swallow you whole and burp you out and not notice you were even there.
Oh, my God, you're scared of it.
We haven't even gotten to great white sharks or saltwater crocodiles or Indonesian needlefish or...
Okay, okay, I say, laughing and holding up my hands for him to stop.
It's no joke, he says with mock seriousness. The ocean will kill you.
He winks at me.
It turns out that Mother Nature is a lousy mom.
I'm too busy laughing to say anything.
So, what else do you want to know?
After that? Nothing.
Come on, I'm a fount of knowledge.
Okay, do one of your crazy tricks for me. He's on his feet in a blink and begins assessing the room critically.
There's not enough room. Let's go up.
He stops himself mid-sentence.
Crap, Maddie. I'm sorry.
Stop, I say. I stand up and hold a hand out. Do not feel sorry for me. I say this harshly, but it's too important a point. I couldn't stand pity coming from him. He flicks his rubber band, nods once, and lets it go.
I can do a one-armed handstand.
He steps away from the wall and simply falls forward until he's upside down on his hands. It's such a graceful and effortless movement that I'm momentarily filled with envy. What's it like to have such complete confidence in your body and what it will do? That's amazing, I whisper.
We're not in church, he whisper shouts back,
voice slightly strained from being upside down. I don't know, I say. It feels like I should be quiet. He doesn't answer. Instead, he closes his eyes, slowly removes his left hand from the floor, and holds it out to the side. He's almost perfectly still. The quiet bubbling of the pond and his slightly heavier breathing are the only sounds in the room. His t-shirt falls up, and I can see the hard muscles of his stomach. The skin is the same warm, golden tan. I pull my eyes away. Okay, I say. You can stop now. He's upright again before I can blink. What else can you do? He rubs his hands together and grins back at me. One backflip later, he sits back down against the wall and closes his eyes.
So, why outer space first?
He asks. I shrug. I want to see the world, I guess.
Not what most people mean by that, he says, smiling.
I nod and close my eyes as well. Do you ever feel... I begin. But then the door opens, and Carla bustles in to rush him out. You didn't touch, right? She asks, arms akimbo. We both open our eyes and stare at each other. All at once, I'm hyper aware of his body and mine.
There was no touching,
Ollie confirms, his eyes never leaving my face. Something in his tone makes me blush hard, and heat travels a slow wave across my face and chest. Spontaneous combustion is a real thing. I'm certain of it. Diagnosis. Webdoc.com. Hysterical abdominal rhopalocera. The condition of having one or more monarch butterflies take up residence in the stomach. Who is affected by HAR?
The disease affects at least one teenaged American girl every 30 seconds. Symptoms: nausea, elevated heart rate, inability to focus, stomach flipping, lightheadedness. Causes: HAR episodes are usually triggered by contact with a romantic interest. HAR sufferers describe feeling symptoms not only during the contact, but before and after as well. Patients with the most acute form of the disease can trigger an episode by simply thinking about their romantic interest. Coupled with an inability to stop thinking about said interest, the disease, read more. Perspectives. Before Carla arrives the next morning, I spend exactly 13 minutes in bed, convinced that I am getting sick. It takes her exactly 6 minutes to unconvince me. She takes my temperature, blood pressure, heart and pulse rates before declaring that I am simply lovesick. "Classic symptoms," she says. "I'm not in love. I can't be in love." "And why not?" "What would be the point?" I say, throwing my hands up. "Me in love would be like being a food critic with no taste buds. It would be like being a colorblind painter. It would be like skinny dipping by yourself." I have to laugh at that one. "Exactly," I say. "Pointless." "Not pointless," she says, and looks at me seriously. "Just because you can't experience everything doesn't mean you shouldn't experience anything. Besides, doomed love is a part of life." "I'm not in love," I say again. "And you're not sick," she retorts, "so there's nothing to worry about." For the rest of the morning, I'm too distracted to read or do homework. Despite Carla's reassurances that I'm not getting sick, I find myself paying too close attention to my body and how it feels. Are my fingertips tingling? Do they usually do that? Why can't I seem to catch my breath? How many somersaults can a stomach do before becoming irreparably knotted? I ask Carla to do an extra check of my vitals, and the results are all normal. By the afternoon, I acknowledge in my head that Carla might be onto something. I might not be in love, but I'm in like. I'm in serious like. I wander the house aimlessly, seeing Ollie everywhere. I see him in my kitchen making stacks of toast for dinner. I see him in my living room suffering through Pride and Prejudice with me. I see him in my bedroom, his black-clad body asleep on my white couch. And it's not just Ollie that I see. I keep picturing myself floating high above the earth. From the edge of space, I can see the whole world all at once. My eyes don't have to stop at a wall or at a door. I can see the beginning and the end of time. I can see infinity from there. For the first time in a long time, I want more than I have. Wonderland. And it's the wanting that pulls me back down to earth hard. The wanting scares me. It's like a weed that spreads slowly just beneath your notice. Before you know it, it's pitted your surfaces and darkened your windows. I send Ollie a single email. "I'm really busy this weekend," I say. "I need to get some sleep," I say. "I need to concentrate," I say. I shut down my computer, unplug it, and bury it under a stack of books. Carla raises a single questioning eyebrow at me. I lower two non-answering eyebrows back at her. I spend most of Saturday suffering through calculus. Math is my least favorite and worst subject.
it's possible that those two facts are related. By evening, I move on to rereading the annotated and illustrated version of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. I barely notice Carla packing up to leave at the end of the day. "Did you have an argument?" she asks, nodding at my laptop. I shake my head no, but don't say anything more. By Sunday, the urge to check my email is acute. I imagine my inbox overflowing with subjectless emails from Ollie. Is he asking more Fast Five questions? Does he want some company? Refuge from his family? "You're okay," Carla says on her way out the door that evening. She kisses my forehead, and I'm a little girl again. I take Alice to my white couch and settle in. Carla's right, of course. I am okay. But like Alice, I'm just trying not to get lost. I keep thinking about the summer I turned 8. I spent so many days with my forehead pressed against my glass window, bruising myself with my futile wanting. At first, I just wanted to look out the window, but then I wanted to go outside, and then I wanted to play with the neighborhood kids, to play with all kids everywhere, to be normal for just an afternoon, a day, a lifetime. So, I don't check my email. One thing I'm certain of, wanting just leads to more wanting. There's no end to desire. Life is short, trademark. Spoiler reviews by Madeline. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. Spoiler alert, beware the Queen of Hearts. She'll have your head. Makes you stronger. There's no email from Ollie. Not one. I even check my spam folder. This shouldn't bother me, and it doesn't. It doesn't bother me a lot. In the interest of thoroughness, I refresh my email 3 more times in about 2 seconds. Maybe it's just hiding somewhere, stuck behind another one. Carla walks in as I'm about to refresh again. "I didn't think you'd be able to unearth that thing," she says. "Good morning to you, too," I say, squinting down at the screen. She smiles and begins her daily unpacking of the medical bag ritual. Why she doesn't leave it here overnight is a mystery. "Why are you frowning? Another dead cat video?" Her smile is toothy and wide, very Cheshire Cat-like. Any minute now, her body will disappear, leaving just a grinning, floating head in its wake. "Ollie didn't send me any emails." I believe nonplussed is the word for her expression. "All weekend," I say, by way of illumination. "I see." She puts the stethoscope in her ears and the thermometer under my tongue. "Did you email him?" "Yes," I talk around the thermometer. "Don't talk, just nod." "Sowie." She rolls her eyes, and we wait for the beep. 99.8, I say, handing the thermometer back to her. I basically told him not to write. Am I being ridiculous? She motions for me to turn around so she can listen to my lungs, but doesn't respond. "How ridiculous?" I prompt. "On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being perfectly rational and reasonable, and 10 being absurd and certifiable." "About an 8, she says without hesitation. I'd been expecting her to say 12, so 8 seems like a victory. I tell her so, and she laughs at me. "So you told him not to write to you, and then he didn't write to you. This is what you're telling me?
Well, I didn't say don't write in big bold letters or anything. I just said I was busy. I think she's going to make fun of me. But she doesn't.
Why didn't you write to him?
Because of what we talked about. I like him, Carla, a lot. Too much.
The look on her face says, is that all? Do you really want to lose the only friend you've ever had over a little bit of heartache?
I've read many, many books involving heartache. Not one has ever described it as little. Soul-shattering and world-destroying, yes. Little? No.
She leans back against the couch.
You don't know this yet, but this will pass. It's just the newness and hormones.
Maybe she's right. I want her to be right so I can talk to him again.
She leans forward and winks at me. That? And he's cute.
He is pretty cute, right? I giggle.
Honey, I didn't think they made them like that anymore.
I'm laughing, too, and imagining a factory with little Ollies coming off an assembly line. How would they ever keep them still enough to package in mail?
Go, she slaps my knee. You have enough things to be afraid of. Love can't kill you.
No, yes, maybe. Monday, 8:09 p.m. Hi.
Hey.
How are you? How was your weekend?
Fine. Good. Yours?
Good, but busy. I mostly did calculus homework.
Ah, calculus. The mathematics of change.
Wow. You really weren't kidding about liking math?
No.
I'm sorry about my email.
Which part?
All of it. Are you upset with me? No, yes, maybe?
No. Yes, maybe.
I don't think you're supposed to use all the answers.
Why do you send it?
I got scared.
Of what?
You. You didn't write to me either.
You didn't want me to.
Dot, dot, dot.
Does the ellipsis mean we're having an awkward silence or that you're thinking?
Both. Why do you like math so much?
Why do you like books so much?
Those are not the same thing.
Why not?
You can find the meaning of life in a book.
Life has meaning?
You're not serious.
It's possible. What book can you find the meaning of life in?
Okay, maybe not just a single book, but if you read enough, you'll get there.
Is that your plan?
Well, I've got the time. Dot, dot, dot.
Thinking?
Yes. I have a solution to our problem.
Listening.
Let's agree to just be friends, okay?
Okay. But no more checking out my muscles.
Friends, Ollie.
And my eyes.
No more talking about my freckles. And my hair.
And your lips.
And your dimple.
You like my dimple?
Friends.
Okay.
Time. Carla makes us wait a week before we can see each other again. She wants to be absolutely sure that being in the same room with Ollie didn't activate any of my triggers. Even though I agree with her that we should wait just to be safe, the week seems interminable. I'm sort of convinced that time has literally, and not just metaphorically, slowed down. But that's the kind of thing that would make headlines. 42. Project name, time passing techniques, notebook number 29. Exercise A, measure shadows. Exercise B, watch glue dry. Exercise C, refresh emails. Exercise D, rearrange books. By alpha, by height, descending, by height, ascending. Chart, perceived versus actual time. Actual time, 1 day. Perceived time, a year. Actual time, 2 days. Perceived time, a decade. Actual time, 3 days. Perceived time, a century. 4 days is a millennium. 5 days, an epoch. 6 days is an era. And 7 days is a giga annum. Mirror, mirror. After an epoch, the week finally ends. I'm giddy and trying not to be. This is more difficult than you'd imagine. Trying not to smile only makes you smile more. Carla watches me struggle to choose what to wear. It's not something I've ever given much thought to. Really, I've never given any thought to it. My closet consists entirely of white t-shirts and blue jeans. The jeans are arranged by type. Straight, skinny, boot cut, wide leg, the ridiculously named boyfriend. My shoes, all Keds, all white, are piled in a heap in the back corner. I almost never wear shoes around the house, and now I'm not sure that I can find a pair that will fit. Rummaging through the pile, I find a left and right one of the same size. They fit, but just barely. I stand in front of the mirror. Is your shirt supposed to match your shoes, or is that your purse? Is white the best color for my chestnut complexion? I make a mental note to do some shopping later. I'll buy a t-shirt in every color until I find the one that suits me best. For the fifth time, I ask Carla if my mom has already left. You know your mother, she says. Has she ever been late a day in her life? My mother believes in punctuality the way other people believe in God. Time is precious, she says, and it's rude to waste someone else's. I'm not even allowed to be late for Friday night dinners. I look at myself in the mirror. Change the V-necked white t-shirt for a scoop-neck white t-shirt for no reason at all. Or not for no reason, but to have something to do while waiting for Ollie. I wish again that I could talk to my mom about this. I want to ask her why I get breathless when I think of him. I want to share my giddiness with her. I want to tell her all the funny things Ollie says. I want to tell her how I can't make myself stop thinking about him, even though I try. I want to ask her if this is the way she felt about Dad at the beginning. I tell myself it's okay. I didn't get sick after the last time I saw him, and he knows the rules. No touching, full decontamination treatment, no visit if he even suspects he could get sick in the next few days. I tell myself there's no harm in lying to my mom. I tell myself I won't get sick. I tell myself there's no harm in friendship. That Carla is right, and love can't kill me. Forecast. Ollie's on the wall again when I enter the room. This time he's climbed all the way to the top. Don't your fingertips ever get tired? I ask.
I've got them on a strict workout regimen, he says, grinning at me.
My stomach does a little flip thing that I'm really going to have to get used to, since it seems to be a side effect of seeing him. I was in this room to do my homework yesterday. I know it's exactly the same as I left it, but it looks and feels different. The room is so much more alive with Ollie in it. If all the fake plants and trees swayed to life right now, I wouldn't be surprised. I walk to the couch and settle into the corner farthest away from him. Down from the wall, he sits cross-legged and leans his back against it. I tuck my legs beneath me, adjust my mass of hair, hug my waist. What is it about being in the same room with him that makes me so conscious of my body and all its parts? He even makes me aware of my skin.
"You're wearing shoes today," he says, notices.
He's definitely a noticer. The kind of boy who would know if you'd rearranged a painting or added a new vase to a room. I look down at my shoes. I have 9 pairs of these exact same shoes.
"And you complain about my wardrobe choices?"
"You only wear black. It makes you look sepulchral."
"I need a dictionary to talk to you."
"Of or relating to a sepulcher."
"Not that helpful a definition."
"Basically, you're the angel of death." He grins at me.
"The scythe gave me away, didn't it? I thought I hid it so well."
He changes positions. Now he's lying flat on his back, knees bent, hands laced behind his head. I shift my body again for no reason, pulling my legs into my chest and wrapping my arms around them. Our bodies are having their own conversation, separate and apart from us. Is this the difference between friendship and something else? This awareness that I have of him? The air filters cycle on, making a low hum beneath the sound of the fan.
"How does that work?"
His eyes are scanning the ceiling. "It's industrial. The windows are sealed, so air only comes in through the filters on the roof. Nothing over 0.3 microns gets in. Also, the circulation system completely changes all the air in the house every 4 hours.
"Wow."
He turns his head to look at me, and I can see him trying to come to terms with just how sick I am. I look away. "The settlement paid for it." Before he can ask, I add, "The trucker who killed my dad and brother fell asleep behind the wheel. He'd been working 3 shifts in a row. They settled with my mom." He turns his head back toward the ceiling.
"I'm sorry."
It's strange because I don't really remember them. Meaning I don't remember them at all. I try to ignore the feelings that surface when I think about them. There's sadness that's not quite sadness, and then guilt. It's weird to miss something you've never had, or don't remember having, anyway.
"Not so weird," he says.
We're both quiet, and he closes his eyes.
"Do you ever wonder what your life would be like if you could just change one thing?" he asks.
"Not usually, but I'm starting to. What if I weren't sick? What if my dad and brother hadn't died? Not wondering about impossible things is how I've managed to be relatively zen."
"Everyone thinks they're special," he says. "Everyone's a snowflake, right? We're all unique and complicated. We can never know the human heart and all that."
I nod slowly, certain I agree with what he's saying now, but equally certain that I'm going to disagree with whatever's next.
"I think that's nonsense. We're not snowflakes. We're just outputs for a set of inputs."
I stop nodding. "Like a formula?"
"Exactly like a formula."
He props himself up to his elbows and looks at me.
"I think there are 1 or 2 inputs that matter the most. Figure those out and you've figured out the person, You can predict anything about them.
Really? What am I going to say now? He winks at me.
You think I'm a brute?